Hi, this is a form in trust, agriculture education, that question for Phil. Can you repeat some of the specifics that you gave for the lower volume and value for pork and lamb?
Okay, I think for pork, as we take a look at the first 3 months of the year, the pork volume was down 14, or the pork value was down 14% at $1.42 billion. So that's January through March. That's the most recent reporting period that we have. If you take a look at the volume of pork exports, they were 525,000 metric tons, and that was down 10% from the same period of last year. If we take a look at the lamb numbers, our lamb numbers are down 18%, down to $5.4 million, and the tonnage is down lower as well. It's down to 2,271 metric tons. So the impact of the pork dispute having, I think, as I mentioned, a lot of impact, and then of course some of the other areas that we've seen with the closure of the Russian market has had a lot of impact as well.
Okay.
The good news is we have seen an upward trend in each of the 3 months that we have statistics for in 2015. We've seen improvement in each of those three. Even though we're still down year over year, you have seen some positive momentum toward the end of the first quarter. Any other questions, please?
This is Webb in Old Peak Magazine. And Bill, or whoever you want to go.
Wes, we're having just a little trouble hearing you. Can you speak up just a bit?
Is that better?
That's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. I was wondering the impact that you see of avian influenza here, trade restrictions around the world, et cetera, the impact that you see that having on U.S. exports in general.
Question is the impact of avian influenza and how that might impact our exports. Are you talking about, you know, it's because some markets are closing to poultry, if that creates new opportunities? Is that what I'm understanding?
Exactly. Yeah, just how that plays out for all of it.
I can speak about the Mexican situation. Mexico is following pretty much the OIE, World Trade Organization, rules in terms of they're not shutting down all poultry imports in the United States. They're doing it by individual states. And Mexico actually continues to import increasing amounts of poultry thus far in 2015, in light of the fact, or in spite of the fact, that there's a number of states that are not allowed to export poultry. So in the case of Mexico, which is obviously probably unique perhaps in this sense, but we expect flows of poultry to continue to increase into Mexico at this time, and therefore would not be creating any extra space, if you will, for more pork or more beef, but still be a competitive meat protein in the Mexican marketplace.
Yeah, I think from the standpoint, and we don't, just to remind you, we don't cover poultry. That's not in our portfolio, just beef, pork, and lamb. But, you know, we export poultry to roughly 150 countries, give or take. And I think that the major impact of the poultry thing would be, if you look at the size of the herd and you look at the number of poultry that has been basically eliminated, it's probably small in comparison to the total herd. But I think the one thing that we have going for us, different than BSE, was that the world is familiarized with this. I mean, when we talk in Asia, for example, they've had this this concern, or they've had this issue for a number of years. Probably for the last 10 years, that's been an issue. So they're quite familiar with this, and most of these countries that we're dealing with and that are large poultry markets, they're familiar with this. Of course, there's Russia, of course, that was a major poultry market, and China. Those were the two most growing and the most stable markets we have over the last 10 years, and we don't have access to those markets. So that has been impactful, of course, and I think Chad in Mexico knows that there's been a lot of poultry, of course, going into Mexico. But The only other thing would be is maybe here in the United States in the domestic market, but from the standpoint of the international marketplace, as far as it having any impact on our beef or pork exports, there has been very, very little impact, maybe some questions from the trade, but nothing that I would say has had any negative impact on our ability to export beef, pork, or lamb from the U.S.
Thank you.
Okay, next question. John, I might just ask you, you had talked about the squeeze that's going on with the duty-free quota in Europe. Could you maybe explain the unattractive options that importers would have in Europe if the capacity of the quota is exhausted?
So, I mean, as I said, what is really fantastic to see is that the importers have worked very, very hard over 6 years to develop the U.S. business, and they're really committed to doing the U.S. business. But, of course, they get to a point where you're saying, I am an importer, I can use a duty-free quota, there are 6 origins which are eligible to ship beef to that duty-free quota, I want to do U.S. business. But if I do U.S. business today at today's cattle prices, at today's euro-dollar rate, at today's price at which I can sell in the European Union, I'm not going to make any money. And in fact, today it's a loss. Whereas, of course, if I buy from Australia or Uruguay, I can make money. So what is different about this duty-free quota and producing NHTC cattle, of course, it's not something which you can just turn on and off. It's not something to say, today it looks profitable, go out and buy some, sell it in Europe, make some money, tomorrow it's not profitable, I stop. The people who do this business are committed long-term in this business. They have to buy cattle forward as much as a year in advance. Of course, the farmers have to commit 18 months, well, from birth, not to use hormones. The importers in Europe are not just buying from month to month. They've committed to buy the beef from the US packers 6 months, 9 months, even up to a year in advance. So it's not something which people say, if I make money, I do it. If I don't make money, I don't do it. It's something to say, we're in this for the long term. We want to do this. We want to develop it. But today, all the economic signals are not good for using U.S. business, and so it's inevitable that the importer will have to take a decision allowing them to survive.
All right, one last call for any questions. Colleen Schreiber has a question.
Phil, you mentioned yesterday about, talked a lot about China and traceability and the ability of the other countries access, whereas we don't. And you hinted at some things that maybe we could do and how Canada, with their latest BSE incident and what they had to do, and they were right back open. So can you talk to us a little bit about where we need to be here in the U.S. in terms of traceability?
Well, I think that...
Phil, if you could just repeat your question.
Yeah, the question was, yesterday in our opening comments, there was a discussion a little bit about the 71 countries that have accessed China. And, of course, one of the primary admission tickets you're going to have to get into the Chinese market is you have to have some form of traceability that... would be hopefully WTO consistent. And what we've seen is with 71 countries, you have countries ranging from Costa Rica to Botswana to a host of countries. And I know there's a lot of other issues that surround this our relationship with China, but as far as beef is concerned, it's been 13 years. So we think that it's time that we really take a close look at a voluntary program that would allow us to access the world's most dynamic and growing beef market, if you will, and so this is really where this came from. I think that we also discussed that when it comes to foreign animal diseases, we have to be very, very vigilant. Of course, biosecurity is very important for us, but according to the OIE, which we all invoked when we had the BSE, that is the universal guidelines for animal health, and people look to the OIE to see if we are in abeyance to it or not. And frankly, that's one of the reasons that we were able to get to our risk classification when it comes to BSE with the OIE. So we need to be vigilant that if something else would occur, that we could maybe take a look at compartmentalization or regionalization. And to do this, you would have to have, again, some form of traceability. So we think that not only for the market access that we see, but also for the time that we might have some foreign animal diseases, these are things that we could do in advance that would help us should we have another crisis like we had back in 2003.
Okay, any final questions for the group? All right, well, thank you very much for joining us this morning.